Are you tired of using soap loaded with chemicals and fragrances? Check out Hero Soap Company. Their soaps contain natural ingredients that are handcrafted and infused with the finest essential oils and pumice for a true clean. Hero Soap Company is veteran-owned, and a portion of Hero Company sales will be donated to charities that help veterans, police, and fire rescue. Memberships start as low as $4.99 a month, and you can have your soap delivered directly to your door. Use promo code FORBIDDEN to get 12% off. That's Hero Soap Company. Welcome back to Forbidden Knowledge News. I'm your host, Chris Matthew. Tonight I want to welcome Elizabeth April. She is a cosmic intuitive channeler who has the ability to go into other realms and dimensions in order to gain access to information through vibration and visuals. She works with individuals who want to gain access to a happier and more fulfilled life. Elizabeth, welcome. How are you doing tonight?
Good. I'm doing well. How are you doing? Thanks for having me.
I'm good. Thank you so much for joining us. Welcome. Your story, it's like an amazing sci-fi adventure movie. So much that the first time I heard it, I was very skeptical. But the more I heard you speak, the more I listened, I realized that you seem to be very wise beyond your years. And the information you were presenting about the nature of reality and consciousness, it was resonating with me a lot. And fast forward, and here we are. And I'm looking forward to hearing your story. But let's start at the beginning. Where did this all start for you?
Yeah, so definitely a lot of people think that I'm quite young doing what I'm doing, which is so beautiful that I got into it at such a young age. So, you know, it began when I was a kid. I was born with extrasensory abilities. So the ability to have or see mostly all visual stuff. So chakras, auras, ghosts and spirits, interdimensional beings. So I was talking to a lot of these different beings at a very young age. I was raised Catholic, so obviously I assumed that I was talking to God, and I would tell my dad all about what God was telling me, which was really interesting. And then, you know, I'd go over to my friend's house and I would tell them that they're, oh, it's so nice that your grandpa's here. And they're like, what do you mean? Grandpa died like 2 years ago, right? And so it was difficult, I think, trying to fit in school because I was having a different kind of experience within my reality than other kids. So that's kind of where I shut down a lot of my spiritual abilities. And it actually, like, I want to kind of fast forward and then hop back because I don't tell this part of the story too much in my childhood. And I think the reason why is because it really wasn't a part of my childhood, and you'll kind of understand why. So between the age of 4 years old and 13 years old, I was abducted. I think, what was it, about six times? And I was abducted by the Greys, but essentially by the Galactic Federation. And I was put into something that I like to call an Earth school. That's what I call it. And basically, I was there in this huge classroom with all these other kids, like from varying ages, from 4 years old to about 15, maybe even younger than that, a little bit younger than that. And we were all in our PJs and our hair was everywhere. And there was this tall gray at the front of the classroom, and he would be teaching us. So I don't include that in my childhood story because I vividly remember them, which is funny. It's kind of a contradiction. I remember them wiping my memory every single time. So they'd put their hand in front of my face. They would wave it just like this. And all of a sudden, you know, the memories of that night were completely gone. And it wasn't until I was 24. So that was, you know, 3 years ago or so, maybe a little bit longer than that, where I got my first ever hypnosis regression session. And I was put back into childhood. And of course, it's all recorded. And I went into these six extremely vivid, you know, completely blacked out memories of being abducted and put onto the school. And And I remember them telepathically telling me, you know, we're going to leave you. And it's going to be a little while before you see us again. This was at 13. But you're going to remember this when it's the appropriate time. And I remember being so sad, you know, at that time, them leaving me and thinking that they'd abandoned me. You know, and then of course your memory is wiped and you go right back to normal reality. But I really do attribute a lot of that kind of experience when I was younger to the extrasensory abilities that I had. Like, I think they, from the age of 4, even though my parents say that I was definitely interacting with and seeing things around the age of 2, which would be before the abductions, but I think that that unlocked a huge aspect of my soul. And it was interesting. It felt like I was living a double life for a while, but I feel like even now in my life, I feel like I'm living a double life, you know, 27-year-old human girl and I don't know, interdimensional cosmic warrior, right? So yeah, so I shut down my abilities at the age of 10. I just wanted to fit in. And then I went through massive amounts of depression, anxiety.
I wanted to ask you, how did your parents react to all this, you know, from the time they started noticing that you were a little different?
Yeah, my dad, he was the one who was actually bringing us to church. So I wouldn't call him Catholic. I think he was just programmed from his parents. So even though he was the one bringing us to church and he was an engineer, so very logical, he was very open spiritually. Like, he got himself through university by taking past life regression courses and doing past life regressions on people. So he's actually the one who kind of introduced me to this. And then my mom, so full of love, but very kind of younger soul. So she was freaked out. I mean, she had no idea what was going on with me. And she basically really dismissed it by saying, oh, you've just been watching too many scary movies. So I'm like, oh, okay, great. I guess I'm crazy. You know, I guess this stuff isn't happening. And in a way, like, I was kind of fishing for that. Like, I was kind of looking for that because it was kind of freaky being able to tap into something that no one else could see.
So take us back to your first abduction experience. You said it was with the Grays. Yeah. Okay, so there are obviously a lot of different types of Grays that I hear about. What did these Grays look like?
Okay, so there's two main kind of divisions within the Grays. Like, I identify myself with the Gray most, so I know all about the Grays. And a lot of people think that I'm Palladian, but no, it's definitely Gray. But yeah, so I call them like the agreeable Grays and the disagreeable Grays, right? So the Grays who are service to self and the Grays who are service to others. Obviously the ones that I am in cahoots with and the ones who abducted me as a child and taught me about conscious vibration and reminded me about all the information that I knew. Those were all the agreeable Grays. They were very service to others, very much so here for the conscious awakening of humanity. So I'll take you through the first abduction that I had at 4. It was such a vivid, of course, going back, you know, there's nothing that's tainting that memory. It's just so clear. And so I was in my bed and I remember my room very clearly. So I was in my bed and there was this bright, blinding flash of white light. And my bedroom was right at the front of the house. And I remember the bears and the ballerina bears and the tutu on my wall and this bright, blinding flash of light. And all of a sudden, I guess that's how they teleported in the room. Because all of a sudden, beside my bed, to the left of me, there was these two short Grays. Now, of course, like, we would call them short Grays, but, you know, to me, when I got out of bed, they were taller than me, right? So that kind of gives a good kind of height difference. But I remember looking up at them and they telepathically told me, they said, you know, there's no need to be scared. We're here to help you. You know, we love you and we want you to come with us. And half of me was freaked out and, you know, the other half of me was super intrigued. And so one of the Grays, and I kind of call them Tweedledee and Tweedledum because that's kind of their energy, like the short ones. Like, it's just that they were there on a mission and they didn't really know much else of what was going on. Anyway, so one of them, you know, stuck out their hand for me to grab. And it just intuitively, instinctively, I grabbed their hand. And I remember looking and like, ooh, that's weird. And they only have 4 fingers. And I remember feeling their skin too. I thought that was also interesting. The only part that I don't vividly remember about the regression was how I got from my bedroom back to their ship. Like, that was just not, because in an instant I held their hand and we're on the spaceship. And we teleport, I guess, into this quite a large room. And there's all of these desks, and the desks were formed in a like a half moon kind of shape. And there's all these kids, mostly older than me, kids who are all sitting at these desks, probably anywhere between 60 and 100 kids. Like there was quite a big room. And then there was this tall gray, so much taller than the short little ones who took me up there, tall gray at the front of the room. And he was teaching something, not sure what it was, but it was all silent. It was telepathic. And then the short little grays, they lead me into this room. And so I go into this room as this four-year-old, and it's all an all-white, much smaller room. The bigger room that I was in was it looked silver, right? It looked like metal. And so I go into this all-white. It looked like once the door closed, it looked like there was no doors, no windows. It's just this pure white room. And sitting in the middle of the room were, I think it was four kids, four other kids, maybe four. Yeah, I think there was four because I was the fifth kids who were all my age. So they were around maybe 3, 4, 5 years old. And they were all sitting in this circle, and there was one spot open for me. And there were these shapes. There was these three-dimensional like shapes, kind of like building blocks that kids would play with, but all different kinds of shapes. So there were spheres, there was triangles, or pyramids, I guess, and there was also cubes. And it was made out of this material that even today, I'm like, I don't know what that was. It was dark gray, and it's almost like it looked like metal, but it wasn't. And it was lighter than plastic. So I don't know what it was, but it was undefinable. Anyway, so I sit down in the circle, and all the kids are doing their own thing. You know, there's one little boy, he's like stacking all these like little, you know, cubes on top of each other. Two of the other kids were rolling one of the bigger spheres back and forth. They were just playing. So I just intuitively, at the age of four, I went for the biggest cube I could go for, right? So no one was touching that. So I went for that. I bring it in front of me. And once again, intuitively, I just knew that I could separate this cube. I could divide it, right? And so I start, and I put my little hands on either end of this cube, and I start pulling it, but not pulling it physically, but pulling it with my mind. And I was so excited to see all of a sudden in the middle of this cube, it's almost like the atoms were separating and I could see this division. It wasn't a clear line. It wasn't like a clear cut. It was this, separation and division. And so right when I was getting to this point where I had the cube fully separated, this medium height gray, so probably around 5.5, 6 feet, medium height gray walks into the room. And in that moment, I'm like, oh, they must have been watching me. Right? I mean, I knew right then that they were watching what I was going to do. So this medium height gray comes in the room and he says, Elizabeth, can you come with me? And I said, okay. And so he takes me away from the small room, the white room. He takes me away from the big classroom. We go down a hallway and we go into a smaller classroom. But same sort of thing. It looked like there was a chalkboard at the front, but it wasn't. It was, you could draw on it with your energy or hologram or something. Anyway, he said, Elizabeth, my name is Henry. That's what he called himself. And so I had this imaginary friend as a kid, Henry, of course. He's like, my name is Henry, and I'm going to be your teacher. And so I'm like, okay. And so he's like, we're going to talk about energy. And so I remember that the first lesson that he gave me was all about consciousness and energy. And I remember him drawing a tree. And so this is now just a private teaching. This is just me in one empty classroom with one gray teacher.
Is it psychic, psychic communication?
Yeah, it was all telepathic. Yeah, nothing was verbal. And I don't know, I guess I just didn't even faze me. It wasn't abnormal to me. And so I remember him vividly drawing a tree on the blackboard, and it was like with white, but it was just energetic, I don't know. and he drew lines in the tree, and he said, what is contained within a tree is the same thing that's contained within you. Which means you have to treat everything, every living thing, the same as you would treat yourself or another human. So he was teaching me this lesson about basically consciousness and that it exists within every living thing on our planet and, of course, within the universe. I don't think we got there. So that was my first lesson. That was my first abduction experience at the age of four.
Now, did these lessons, was that like an ongoing thing where they would take you and just continue to teach you more lessons?
Yep. So that's basically what happened for the four other abductions between 4 and 13. The very last abduction at 13, and I'll tell you this because it's so cool. So this was the last one, and I was definitely older at that point. And the last abduction. So I remember Henry picking me up again. He greets me there. It was always the short Grace who picked me up. And then when I got to the ship, it was always Henry to greet me. And he said, Elizabeth, this is going to be our last meeting for a while. And I was so sad. I started crying. And he's like, don't worry, we're going to come back, you know, into your life when it's right. And he said, for this last meeting, I just want to give you a tour. Like, I just want to show you around the ship. I'm like, what? So I thought it was so cool. He showed me like this giant ecosystem, kind of looked like a giant terrarium or something on the inside of the ship. We were walking down the halls. It kind of looked like little shops on all the, you know, it kind of looked like we were walking through like an indoor mall, something like that. But it wasn't. It was a giant spaceship. And then he puts his hand on the wall, and it looks like it was just a blank wall, puts his hand on the wall, and all of a sudden this door opens. I'm like, oh, that's kind of cool. And I figured it was kind of like an elevator. That's how I could relate to it. And this was kind of after the tour. And so we go into this really tiny, like a little bit of a closet type of space, and the door closes. I'm like, oh, where are we going? Didn't feel anything. The door opens again. All of a sudden, we're in another part of the ship. I'm like, what? Right? So this thing, I don't know, I guess transported us there. I didn't feel any movement. It just closed and opened, and we were somewhere else. And we were in the command center. We were in the control room. And so this must have been right at the front of the ship, because it literally looked like a Star Trek, like a scene from Star Trek, like you said, sci-fi movie all the way. And it opens out to this huge space. It was like rounded. And windows, floor to ceiling, the universe, space, I don't know, was all around us. And there was this, so all these kind of desks all around where the windows were, like command kind of control desks, like all these different beings, many different, not just Grays, many different types of interdimensional beings. And there's this huge desk that's right in the middle, and it's kind of overseeing all of the other desks and the windows in front. And there's a huge desk and this really cool looking chair. Like, I can describe it almost perfectly. It was black and it kind of had this, like, I don't know, kind of like rounded up. Anyway, and so right away at 13, I run, like I sprint over to the command desk. And I'm like, this is my office. This is my desk. This is mine. I literally said that. And of course, at the time, I didn't know, but, you know, one of my previous incarnations was being the tall gray ambassador for that, you know, for that spaceship. So immediately I recognized the room and I recognized the desk and I run over, I'm like, this is mine. And so, of course, the current ambassador, that's what I call them, the current ambassador was sitting there. And of course, how rude of me to like run up and say, this is mine. And so he looks at me and telepathically, he's like, Elizabeth, nice to see you. Like, would you like to sit? And I'm like, yes, I would. And so it was so funny. I'll never forget. Like, I sit down in the chair. So he gets up and he moves aside. And I sit down in the chair and it doesn't move. Like, the chair is just like in its position. And my legs are dangling. Like, I could barely fit in the chair. My arms are stretched out. I'm trying to reach the command, like the controls. And I'm like, okay, this doesn't feel right. Because here I am at 13 as a human. You know, last time I was sitting in that chair, I was a freaking 8 foot tall gray being. But I even remember looking at the controls saying, oh, you guys have upgraded some stuff, because, you know, these controls were not as advanced as the last time I sat here. And then, yeah, and then they put me back into, back to Earth. And that was the last time that I've interacted with them at a physical level on board their ship. Yeah.
Now, we should have mentioned this in the beginning, but you've never really done any research on anything like UFOs, aliens, consciousness, any of that stuff, as a child, as a teenager, or now, right?
Right, yeah. So at first, you know, when I went to conferences and I was a speaker, everyone's like, oh, you don't do research? Oh, well, we're not going to be listening to you then. Like, it was a huge downfall that I didn't do any external research. But I was told from my spirit guides at a very young age, like 16 years old, not to read any books, watch any documentaries. Like, I've never even read another abduction experience from someone else. All I know is what I channel and what I experience, which is, in my books, it's enough. And nowadays, you know, a lot of people appreciate the fact that, yeah, like I'm pretty clean and pretty pure. And that's kind of how it was described to me, is keep your information as pure as possible. If I were to be reading books on this kind of stuff, then I'm just dealing with other people's projected perceptions. I'm already dealing with my own human perception, and it's difficult enough to navigate. So, yeah.
Oh, Oh, my mic went out for a second. No, but that's very interesting. Now, you said that you were previously a tall gray in a previous life. Now, how did you find this out? How did this come about?
Yeah, super cool. So it's actually how I found that out was completely unrelated to the 13-year-old experience of me saying, oh, this is my desk. Because, of course, that was at 24 that I found all of that out. So in my first conscious, that's what I have to describe it as, my first conscious abduction at the age of 18. So when I was 18, I went away to university. I just wanted to get out of my hometown. And the first thing I wanted to do in going to university was go to a 10-day meditation, silent meditation sit. Called Vipassana. So no technology, you're not even supposed to look at each other. It's just you and your ego for 10 days. And so of course this meditation center is out in the middle of nowhere. It's about 5 miles down the road from a military base. I mean, it's got all the signs for the perfect abduction. And on the second night of meditation, I was taken very vividly. There was no wiping of the memory. It was all a very vivid conscious experience and very scary as well, very unlike my childhood ones. I was taken by tall whites. Okay, I know there's a lot of like tall grays, tall whites, but it's just a very vague name for that type of being. It's probably not their official name. Anyway, so I was taken by these tall whites and
I've always wanted to know what these tall whites looked like.
Yeah, what they look like. So I would say probably about 7 feet tall. Maybe 7.5, really elongated limbs, very humanoid body. So one head, you know, two arms, two legs, very long fingers, not totally sure how many they had, but their skin was so thin and so white and so pale that it was almost translucent. They had, I want to say, smaller eyes, and I remember them having hair, but it was like kind of this gross, like straggly white hair. And that's mostly what I remember. But when they took me and I went up on that ship, I was sitting in a metal chair, and there was about 7 of them all standing in front of me, just watching this take place. And they ended up having this machine to the right of me, and it was this big silver box. And coming from the silver box was a cylinder, and the cylinder would get smaller and smaller and smaller as it came closer to me. And it basically went into my ear. And I knew in that instant that they were chipping me. And tracking me for whatever reason. And that was it. But I was paralyzed. I could see, I could look around, I could blink, but I wasn't able to telepathically communicate with them. There was a lot of fear that I feel like they were manipulating within me. I felt like it wasn't my own. And then that was it. As soon as it happened, they put me back in my bed and I woke up right away. And I'm like, what is going on? It went up to my ear and there was just a droplet of blood, you know, coming from my ear. And that was my validation. Even though the next day I did steal a butter knife from the kitchen and I hid it underneath my pillow. And I basically said, if they're going to come back, like, I'm going to get them. And it's not that I wanted to hurt them. I actually just wanted proof. I'm like, maybe if I can, like, scratch them, I can get some green blood or, like, something, you know? I don't know. But it was a little ridiculous. But they never came back. And I'm glad that I didn't leave early because of that experience. Because I was thinking about, oh, my goodness, I don't want this to be my whole, like, 10-day meditation. And also, like, I wasn't able to talk about the experience to anyone because it was a silent meditation retreat. So what am I going to say? So it was a really tough position for me to be in. But the whole point is, after that abduction experience, I mean, by this point in time, I was 18 years old. I started to step really heavily back into spirituality. I was having very vivid past life recall. I would stub my toe and get a vision of a past life. You know, that's how, you know, lucid I was. I was doing lucid dreaming, telepathy, astral traveling, remote viewing. Like, I was like in the mix of all of it. Was I totally talking to aliens before that experience? No, absolutely not. But if you asked me if I believed in aliens, I'd say, yeah, sure. I mean, there's got to be something out there. But I didn't believe that they were actually here until that abduction experience. And then after that abduction with the tall whites, I believe it really was meant to happen because I started having very vivid recall and very vivid flashback to myself as a tall gray being on board this ship, to the point where I'd be walking down the hallway of my university going to class, and I would flip back into a reality where I was walking down the hallway of my dimly lit spaceship as an 8-foot-tall gray ambassador. And I started getting all these clips of signing contracts, of coming to this planet, and what I was in charge of, and what I did on a daily basis, and how I fed myself, and it just everything came back, you know, in a whirlwind. So that was 18. So I was introduced to 18. I was also introduced to the Galactic Federation and a lot of those different kind of bodies as well back then. And of course, I've been working with all of those and so much more since then as well.
Now, I've heard of this Galactic Federation from a few different people. Can you describe what exactly is the Galactic Federation?
Yeah, for sure. So the easiest way to put it would be a... benevolent? It would be a benevolent government system for the universe, right? And then every galaxy has its own federation, and it's really, you know, once again, very sci-fi. And at the time when I was introduced to the Galactic Federation, and I was, it was back in 2011, it was actually, you know, almost to the day, it was December 21st, 2011, right before 2012. So it was a really big kind of transition. And I was invited to a meeting, a Galactic Federation meeting. It was my first Galactic Federation meeting in the astral realm. Well, it was in the physical, but I went in the astral, and it was inside the moon. It was inside the center of the moon. I'm like, what? The moon's hollow? This is crazy. But anyway, yeah. So I was greeted by a Palladian being, and he told me that there was going to be a meeting that night on the 21st of December. And he said, it's going to be at 2 a.m. your time. And it's important that you're not sleeping. It's important that you're awake for this and that you're conscious so that you can receive the information as such. Once again, at that point, I was fully, you know, remote viewing, astral traveling. So that was very easy for me to go there. And then at 1 a.m., you know, I took a nap. 1 a.m., I woke up, drank a bunch of coffee. I was used to it as a student. And boom, 2 a.m., I was greeted once again by the same Palladian. And he said, all right, you're ready. Come with me, Elizabeth. And I was just in a meditative state. And we astral travel over to the inside of the moon. And they started talking about things like the collapse of this reality and this new fifth dimensional state of being. And they started introducing me to the concept of 144,000 and how we're supposed to be here to raise the vibration and how we're not all here yet. And, you know, we're waiting, but it's happening. And all of that, I'm like, what? This is insane. But I will say that there was a reaction in me because after learning about this Galactic Federation, and I was kind of snooping around some spaceships and stuff back then as astral traveling, I was disappointed. I was shocked. I was studying global political economy at the time in university. That was what my major was in. And I'm like, come on, you've got to be kidding me. Like, you need a government for the universe? I thought you guys were eighth dimensional beings. Like, you don't have your shit, you know, together yet. Like, what's going on? So I was definitely a little disappointed because I was like, it doesn't get better than this. Like, we still have to have a government. We still have to have an organized, but now I understand it's actually quite necessary. But I remember the reaction quite clearly. I was very disappointed.
Now, I understand they actually at some point explained to you what is going on with the Mandela effect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So please do tell us about that.
Yeah. So I'll just preface with, I don't have all the information on this. There's still a couple of, you know, black holes, in a sense, with the Mandela effect, but essentially what they explained to me, and this was through a series of years. I mean, this wasn't all together, but what they explained to me was back in 2012, there was a collapsing of our current reality, and that opened up new pathways for multiple different realities to take hold. And so what they told me was back in 2012, there was really kind of a battle between light and dark, but really high vibration and low vibration on the planet. Of course, if you know anything about quantum physics, you'll know that two different frequencies cannot coexist in the same space, kind of like radio stations. You can't have 101.2 and 97.9 together at the same time. You just can't. So what they said was these two different polarity vibrations were coexisting at the same time in 2012. So when the reality that we knew it collapsed, it actually split and divided our Earth into two very similar, but also simultaneously very different vibrational frequencies and realities. And so instead of thinking about it as splitting and you have Earth 1 and Earth 2, think about it splitting on top of each other. Okay, so you have Earth 1 and Earth 2, but simultaneously existing, not linearly existing. It's not one or the other. It's both at the same time, but the division was quite clear. And so they basically said, they told me back then that there was going to be a huge collapse, and they actually said that the old Earth was going to end in nuclear war. And they actually showed me a vision of the planet imploding. I had no idea that that was even a possibility, but I was learning nuclear proliferation in university. So I'm like, what? So they showed me that the third dimensional Earth was going to collapse and that we were all going to be moving and existing over to, you know, the fifth dimensional reality. And we basically we had the mission of raising people's vibration to get to the fifth dimension at that time. And back in 2012, you know, I was thinking to myself, oh my goodness. So what does that mean? That means my dad's going to die. My brother's going to die. All my friends are going to die because they're not awakened. Right? Like at that time, I'm like, how on earth are we going to get, you know, 7 billion people on the planet to awaken? And now, just a few years later, really, I'm seeing these people who I would never assume, you know, awakening. And I'm like, yes, it's happening. You know, I literally thought I would lose everyone that I loved in the collapse of the third dimension. Which is so interesting. So this is kind of why we're seeing the split of memory as well. So I'll give you a really good example about the Mandela effect, and then we can maybe move topics or hear what you have to say. But the best example was when I really got into this, they gave me a lot more information back in 2016. I was telling people about this, teaching people about it. And this client of mine, you know, she calls me up and she's like, Elizabeth, the weirdest thing just happened and I'm so freaked out and you have to tell me what's going on. And I said, okay, lay it on me. And she's like, well, you know, I've been really like thinking about aliens and talking about, you know, quantum physics and all this stuff. And my husband, you know, he's just stubborn. He's not into it. And last night we had this incredible conversation. We were talking about everything. We're both being vulnerable and emotional. And we had this like 4-hour intense conversation about everything. And then this morning, we wake up and we go to the grocery store and she turns to her husband and she's like, wow, what an incredible conversation that was last night. And he's like, what conversation? We didn't have a conversation last night. And she's like, I don't know what's going on. Is it my husband? Is he gone? Like, is it a different person? And I told her, I tapped into it. I didn't know at the time, you know, but I tapped into it. I'm like, oh, it makes sense. When you guys were in that conversation the night before, you both raised your vibration to the fifth dimensional level. So you guys had that incredible conversation in a new vibrational frequency. When you slept, he went back into his safe place, which is the third dimension frequency, the fear frequency. And you continued to be in the fifth dimension as you are. And when you woke up, he had no recollection, no memory of what happened in the fifth dimension because he was back in the third. And you had recollection of what happened in the fifth dimension, but not what happened in the third. And c'est la vie. That's kind of how the Mandela effect works. It's weird, but it's super cool.
It is very strange. And kind of explain what you mean by the third dimension will be collapsing and we will be moving into the fifth dimension. You know, there's a lot of misunderstandings around this. I'm not sure I even understand it myself. So can you explain what's the difference between these different vibrational dimensions and frequencies and everything that has to do with it?
Yeah. So ultimately, this is kind of where I haven't been given all of the information. Like I said, at first, I got a very clear visual of the third dimension world collapsing in nuclear warfare. And then it's almost like those souls either move on or they hop over to the fifth. But I haven't really tapped back into that for a while, and I haven't actually also gotten a lot of visuals of the nuclear warfare or this World War III. Like, I haven't gotten that since 2012. And I really, all I see now is a utopian society. So I don't know if I'm just tapping into the fifth dimensional state or the world, you know, the new world, in a sense. Who knows, right? So that's kind of where some of the information is blanked out for me. I don't fully know how the third dimension is going to collapse. Ultimately, though, I can kind of explain third versus fifth. So third dimension density is just basically full of that fight and flight mechanism. It's really kind of that survival type of energy that we have. The biggest thing that we need to realize is that this reality, this physical reality, will not change in the fifth dimension. So we're still going to have, you know, houses and trees and jobs and all of that, you know. Ultimately, the biggest difference when we're transitioning is our vibration, which essentially affects our perception, which in a sense affects our entire reality. So yeah, our job will change. Yeah, our relationships will change. Yeah, I mean, everything in our physical life will change, but only because your perception and your vibration change first. So, and it's, you know, it's catastrophic for the individual in the moment, but it's quite graceful when you think about actually flipping an entire dimension. We also have to just mention as well, the fourth dimension is the dimension of time, right? So the interesting thing about getting into the fifth dimension or this higher plane of existence still on this planet, once again, we're still in the same bodies, but just a different kind of world we're in, is the fourth dimension is time. So we're actually surpassing the concept of time altogether when getting into the fifth dimension. So the interesting thing is that when you start tapping into these new vibrations, you're tapping into a quantum world, which means that time can slow down, time can speed up, time can quantify, you can loop time. Like, it gets really interesting, really kind of weird, you know, when you really start tapping into that fifth dimension state, because space and time are not what we typically perceive it in that third dimension. So one example is, it's kind of a random example, but it just popped in. So instead of, like, say, for example, in the third dimension, you're like, I want a cup of coffee. All right, I'm going to go get a cup of coffee. So you scrounge around for some change. You walk down the street. You buy a cup of coffee. You walk home. There you go. You just manifest or created. You have a cup of coffee in the third dimension. It's a very linear, very slow way of existence. The fifth dimension, if you want to manifest a cup of coffee in the fifth dimension, you say, I want a cup of coffee. I'm going to trust that it's going to happen. Then you step out your door and you take a good stretch and your neighbor's like, hey, Fred, guess what? Just got you a cup of coffee. I'm like, oh, perfect. I was just wanting a cup of coffee. Boom, instantaneous manifestation. You skip all of the linear middle stuff and you're there. You're hopping, you're looping, you're quantifying, you're advancing. Like, it's really incredible, kind of weird, but it does require a lot of trust, you know, and a lot of alignment vibrationally. So a lot of people right now, they're collapsing their old reality. They're collapsing their third dimension. Like, we're seeing this flip on a very individual scale rather than a mass scale, which is probably a good thing, because when we see this flip on a mass scale, we're seeing things like Harvey Weinstein being taken down. You know, we're seeing things like major pedophile rings and a lot of the, you know, underground back end stuff, you know, transitioning. But we're also going to see major transitions in the political sphere, as we have been seeing, and the economic sphere. You know, really a lot of things are going to be changing. So it's important that we shift and change ourselves first, which requires that collapse and that ego death in order to make that that transition.
The more I look into the nature of reality and the UFO phenomenon and the paranormal, it seems that it's all starting to kind of blend together and be connected in many ways. And the world of angels and demons as well. It seems that once you get into looking into these things, that it's all connected in some way. So tell us a little bit about what you know about the realm of angels.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very cool. One thing that I want to know, just on what you mentioned, when I put myself out there publicly, I mean, of course, at that point I had clients and I was doing all this stuff on the back end and communicating with the Galactic Federation, but, you know, it was all very private. And then 2016, I was like, okay, I got to put myself out there. Which is when I started doing conferences and videos and, you know, all of the stuff. It was so difficult for me to define myself. I'm like, okay, I'm not just a medium. I'm not just a psychic. I'm not just a, you know, interdimensional channeler. I'm not just an energetic healer. I'm not just a past life regressionist. I'm not just an astral traveler. Like, what am I? I don't know. You know, I don't want to be the alien girl. I don't want to be the ghost girl. Like, and it still is today. Like, it's so difficult for me to define myself in a world that is still existing within this linear, the linear confines, you know, of categories, right? So But I do believe it's all blending together. And I believe that, you know, at least I'm trying to be one of the ones to say, it's okay to not have a definition on yourself. It's okay to just be in fluid motion with quantum physics and aliens and this, you know. And I feel like even going to some alien conferences, there's just a lot of people who are like, oh, I remember this, the first alien conference I ever went to, which was my first conference. It was back in 2016. And I was on this panel. And of course I was, you know, I still am the youngest one on stage typically. And there was this, you know, quite an older man who was really, you know, really well known. I actually don't know what his name was, but he was sitting beside me, and he's like, he turns to me right before the panel begins. And he's like, you know, Elizabeth, he's like, I've been studying UFOs for 30 years. I'm like, oh yes. Tell me all about it. You know, like give me the inside scoop. Right. And he's like, I made the conclusion that witnessing UFOs and having abductions is directly related to a spiritual experience and a third eye awakening. I'm like, wait, it took you 30 years of a lot of devoted research and study to come up with this profound fact that spirituality and like witnessing UFOs. I had no idea at the time that that was unheard of, that those two modalities were not connected. I'm like, what? I'm a spiritual person. I'm like connected.
When you said that, I think I actually know who you're talking about.
That's so funny. Anyway, so I was like baffled, and I was like, oh, this is where we're at. You know what I mean? Like I'm like, whoa, that's where we're at. So then I'm like way up here. You know, I'm like, not that there's any better or worse, but I'm like, you know, which is tough to kind of navigate this field, you know, talking about these different things. But anyway, what was the original question?
Sorry. We're going to talk about angels. Angels. Do you have any connections to angels?
I channel them, and I channel them a lot for my clients. I don't personally connect with them. I would say like the other group that's very similar to angels are Palladians, and I probably connect more with them. But yeah, angels, like honestly, like my ultimate opinion is they absolutely do exist. Sometimes they have wings, sometimes they don't. I've also connected with archangels, and like I call them ascended angels. They're much bigger. They glow golden. But ultimately, angels are aliens. Like that's what people, it's like so hilarious because you were like, oh yeah, I believe in angels, but I don't believe in those aliens. Like angels are interdimensional beings. Aliens are interdimensional beings. And aliens, like interdimensional beings, don't even like being called alien because ultimately, you know, that would be saying that they're foreign, you know, and they're not. They're a part of us. And in a way, we are also interdimensional beings. Yeah, we're not like the 12th dimension or anything, but we're the third dimension. We're still a dimensional being here in the universe, and we are aliens in our own right, you know? So people really have to stop categorizing and get away from the fear behind angels and demons and the polarity and the drama, you know? They're all interdimensional beings, and they're all beautiful.
Now, earlier when you said where you were talking about your tall white experience with that abduction, and you said there was a lot of fear surrounding it, I'm wondering if they are part of one of these factions that are causing a lot of the turmoil here on Earth that are kind of influencing some of these elite practices, maybe some of these occult things, or if it's associated with some other lower vibrational entities. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so after probably at least a year after the experience, I channeled it and I went to my friends at the Galactic Federation. I said, why did that happen? I kind of knew it happened to open me up, right, to what was going on and who I really was. So that really that unlocked crazy amounts of DNA in me, just having that experience, whether it was positive or negative. But what they told me was the tall whites were very service to self. It's not that they hated humans, they just didn't care for them. And ultimately, what I heard from the Galactic Federation was that these types of tall whites have an agreement with the government, like the human Earth governments, to do technology exchange. So the tall whites, like from what I've channeled, are tall and white because they've manipulated their own genome so many times that they are now just this white amorphous type of blob, and they're dying. Like their species is dying. So they're trying to connect with the human DNA to see if there's anything that they can pull from humans to basically help them advance and really save their species. And so they decided to make an agreement with the Earth governments to say, we will give you some of our technology if you give us the rights to, you know, 100,000 abductions per year or what have you, right? And so they had an agreement. Doesn't mean that they're in cahoots with the government necessarily. Like, I don't think the Tall Whites, they might be, but ultimately I don't think they're necessarily fully a part of the Illuminati. Like, from what I felt, it feels like the Tall Whites are just here for themselves, and they just wanted the permission to be here, you know?
Huge question. Who or what are the Anunnaki?
Okay. So from my understanding, they're an extremely ancient, very humanoid-looking species. They were one of the first, from what I understand, intelligent species in this universe. So they're quite ancient. At a certain point in time, they started making other species, other beings, right? So they were actually, you know, master geneticists in a lot of ways. They would implant their own genome into other beings all over this universe to create very humanoid looking, five-star type of beings, in the universe. And so then in a way, like, these species were their children, but they also used them a lot to get what they wanted, whether that be, you know, mining different minerals on different planets for their own gain, saving their planet as well. But the other thing too is, like, so I call them seed planners. Some of them are really dark and some of them are really light. I mean, I communicate with a lot of Anunnaki, and they're super, very, very knowledgeable, very advanced, and also very kind and compassionate. I've seen others who just kind of, you know, don't really care. Like, a lot of the times when they created these different beings and different species, like, they helped to create the Palladians, they helped to create the angels, and they're ancient species. And it was the Anunnaki who helped to create them, but they didn't take any responsibility over this species. Sometimes, depending on the leader, they would take so much responsibility that they would fully control and kind of enslave that species. And other times they just literally created something, didn't care about following through, dropped the mic and walked away because it didn't work out. But once again, they helped to create many of the species in this universe, and they were meant to kind of do that. That was in their contracts to do that. And so now we're seeing, you know, with what's going on this planet, we're seeing a lot of Anunnaki coming through and actually helping the planet raise its vibration and bringing ancient knowledge to this planet to kind of help it, because I think part of them, some of them, feel this guilt from what has happened in the past, both on this planet and off this planet. And so being here and helping us is kind of helping complete some of their karma in a way. And then there's a couple of Anunnaki for sure who don't really want to see us grow. But I see most of that kind of anger and resentment coming from the reptilians and the draconians on this planet. Not that they're all bad, but that's the main species who I see who are really controlling and jealous. I mean, that's really the energy. It's this jealous and this fear of humans and wanting to, you know, take down the human species. And I don't blame them. I mean, the reptilians do believe that this planet was originally theirs. And I do believe that it was actually originally theirs. I mean, I've astral traveled back to, you know, the beginning in a sense. And yeah, they were around with dinosaurs, right? I mean, they were around way before human beings ever were. And they helped to create the humans. And then all of a sudden they were told to get off the planet or go underground, right? By the Galactic Federation. They came through and they said, you can't manipulate the humans anymore. And so half of them left, like actually left, and then half of them went underground. And that's where they've created all their underground caverns and those kind of systems. But once again, it's this brooding, you know, resentment for the fact that, oh, so who are these brand new species that get to roam around when we have to go underground? I mean, that doesn't add up. This is our planet. So that's kind of who I've been dealing with most of the time when it comes down to dark and nefarious type of energies. But once again, they're not all bad. I mean, there's definitely some reptilians who work for the Galactic Federation, and they definitely help out as well.
Would you say it's a large portion of the reptilians that are working with the dark factions, the deep state, the Illuminati, stuff like that?
Oh yeah, definitely, like 3/4 at least, for sure. At least 75% of them are pretty pretty low vibrational, and you just kind of have to have compassion over them because they're stuck, you know, essentially.
Now, going back to the nature of reality and the way everything works, the more you look at it, it does seem like we're living in some sort of simulation. You know, when you talk about the Mandela effect and the splitting of realities and the way that synchronicities work, it's just, it seems like it is, I don't know if it's a simulation or a holographic universe. We do seem to, in a way, project our reality. At least that's the way I see it so far. What are your thoughts on that? Is it some sort of projection that's just coming from our consciousness?
Yeah, so it really depends. I've looked into a lot of simulation theory and downloaded a lot of different pieces of information. But once again, just a little disclaimer, I definitely don't know all about, you know, this kind of theory and simulation. So I'm still kind of navigating some of that information and piecing it together. My belief, my understanding based on what I've channeled is that this entire universe is, it's in existence in the way that it is physical, right? So it exists within, you know, atoms. And I believe that there's 12 different dimensions within this universe. And I believe that our consciousness does create this reality. And I also believe in those divine algorithms, right, which is a Fibonacci sequence. And it's almost too perfect to be true. But essentially, in order for anything to be in existence, it has to have a system, right? So that mathematical equation behind everything in this universe is the system of this universe. So basically I believe that in a sense, this is a video game. And what we don't understand is that we are the programmers of this video game. We contracted ourselves to be in this body. We contracted the very next moment to happen, you know, and with our free will, we're able to freely in the present moment program the video game as we're playing it, which is pretty wild. So it's cool to have this kind of alternate perspective of you're in the video game, you've made up your own rules for your own video game, you know, you have different levels for your individual video game, but ultimately you can reprogram and program it on the fly with your free will. So we've already programmed the video game with our, you know, contracts and blueprints that we wrote before this lifetime. And then when we're living in this lifetime, we can override the original programming of the video game with our conscious free will, which is such a trip. So do I believe that, you know, in the Matrix, we're like these bodies that are being absorbed by the machine and everything's just a projection? No, not to that extent. Do I believe that in the majority, this is just an illusion and this isn't actually the truth? Absolutely. You know, we need to be understanding that, you know, taking a step back, there's so much more in existence than just what we see in front of us. And this is just a game. We're just here to play the game. We're here to learn the lessons. We're here to be challenged and to grow and to move forward. And then we do it all again in the next dimension and then the next dimension. And then I'll kind of explain like the end of the video game, right? So you get through all these levels. You learn all these lessons in every dimension through all these different incarnations. And then you get to dimension 12. Like I believe I've channeled there's 12 dimensions, potentially a 13th dimension happening, not totally sure. Anyway, so you get to dimension number 12 and you're this beautiful etheric being who's overviewing the entire universe and that's your existence. I mean, that's what you chose to live in. That's your incarnation in that lifetime. Once you've learned all the lessons, once you've been all of the incarnations, once you have, you know, been through all of the different dimensions and you've, you know, gotten through all the levels, you have a choice to make. This is what I've, you know, I've seen the end of the end. You have a choice to make and your choice is, you can infinitely go back to source consciousness in this universe. You can infinitely just go back to the oneness and nothingness all at once. You know, you can infinitely go back there and just kind of chill, you know, just as this like consciousness, you know, connected to all the collective consciousness. Or, which is usually the method that most people take, or most beings take, or souls take, or you can actually just go ahead and create your own universe, which is really cool. So after you've basically like won, you know, the game, you know, in a sense, or gotten through the game in this universe, you just become your own universe and you start all over again. Because essentially, if you think about it, if you were at source and you had everything, there was no need for anything. You had all knowledge, you had all connection, you had all resources, you had everything. It just takes a little bit of time for life to get a little bit boring and a little bit meaningless, right? So of course, with everything, you want to start with nothing again and incarnate and experience yourself through different perceptions. And that's what you basically do. So I've been to a place like the one time a couple of years ago, I wanted to know if there was other universes because I've never actually seen that. And so I went to this place and it literally looked like, the only way I can describe it is a donut. Okay, so it looked like a donut, and inside the donut, it was blackness, all dark, but this donut, and it had like these fine, wispy, white lines to kind of make the shape of a donut, and then inside the donut were all of these, it looked like little tiny galaxies, but what it was explained to me were those were actually all individual universes, and later on, I realized that what I was looking at was the torus frequency, but I was looking at the torus frequency from the top down. So it looked like a donut for me. I'm like, oh, the multiverse is just a giant donut with all these different, you know, universes within it. So anyway, so yeah, so after you win this game, in a sense, and you overcome this simulation, you go and you create your own simulation. And then you have all these different players who are all programming their own individual realities and incarnations. So it's cool.
That's fascinating. I find it, you know, that you would have to probably go through so many thousands, millions of lifetimes to actually win this game. So, you know, it's possible you could be reincarnated as different beings on different planets. And do you think consciousness can be reincarnated as even, you know, plant life or different animals as well?
Oh, absolutely. Everything that emits a vibration has a consciousness or a soul within it. So I've done a lot of past life regressions, like on a lot of people, and I also go into people's past lifetimes every day with my clients. So of course I've explored past lifetimes where you're a fish in the ocean, or coral at the bottom of the ocean, or moss on another planet, or a tree growing in your backyard. I mean, it's really incredible. And I've also, you know, telepathically communicated with the souls that are in trees as well. And of course, all the hippies were like, I talk to my trees. Well, I mean, they do talk back. They are souls, you know. And those I call like lower life forms, in a sense, because they don't have the self-awareness that other things may have. And so a lot of people ask me, they're like, Elizabeth, you know, have you ever met a soul who's like the first time on this planet? So I have met souls very, very rarely who are like brand new to this planet because they're very cosmic. Usually they're extremely awkward, sometimes a little bit, you know, mentally, you know, not all there, right? Because it's the density here is so tough for them. But ultimately I've never met anyone who was just a human. You know, like we are a master species. We don't realize. I mean, yeah, there's a lot of various sleep people out there, but we are a master species, and only souls who would be able to handle the extent of the polarity world are able to be here. So even like, you know, if it's your first time incarnating into the third dimension, you're going to be a blade of grass. You're going to be a hive mind like the bees or the ants. You know, you're going to be a tree. And then slowly but surely, you're going to be maybe a cheetah. But even cheetahs have an awareness of what they need and those kind of things, rather than being more passive as a plant. So, you know, it takes a while to kind of build up to get to the place where you can be conscious enough in such a complex form to not only deal with all of your projections and emotions and attachments, but dealing with everyone else's as well. And the entangled weave that the entangled web that we all weave. Yeah.
So all that being said, we were talking about the awakening earlier, how people definitely seem to be awakening. I noticed this because the other day, you know, I'm having a conversation with my parents and we're talking about UFOs, and my dad's, you know, actually saying how he believes that UFOs exist. And this is just stuff that I would have never talked to my parents about even 5 years ago. And it's not just that, I see it on in my friends that I haven't talked to in a while, and you go back and talk to them now, and it's like, wow, they're much more open-minded. All this stuff is happening right now. And we were talking about possibly ascending into the fifth dimension. Now, do you see this happening within our lifetime?
Absolutely. So timelines are a little bit all over the place. The biggest timeline that I know right now, and I just kind of go step by step because the Galactic Federation doesn't tell me a whole lot because timelines can change so quickly. Right. So when I take a look at a timeline in the future, I'm looking at the most probable timeline based on our current vibration, if that makes sense. So the timeline that I see right now is between 2020 and 2024, we're going to see a huge collapse of the third dimension. So everyone since 2016 to basically 2019, between that timeline, if you have as an individual let go of your job or made major transitions with your romantic relationship or your friendships or your family or your living situation, if you've really collapsed your physical foundations and made transitions, it typically means that you are, like I like to call the first wave of awakening, even though we've had many, many waves of awakening throughout our human history. But right now, just relatively, I would call it the first wave of awakening. You know, 2016 to 2019 is huge. I also consider a lot of these people who made the collapse, who had the ego death before everyone else, those are the people who I consider to be the teachers. They are the way showers. They are the thought leaders. They are the ones taking it for the team. They are the ones planting the seed for their friends and family, such as you and I. And then moving from 2020 to 2024 is where kind of the rest of the world is going to make that shift and really break down their walls and break down their own perceptions and attachments. So, and then after that, I see that's when we're really going to shift into the fifth dimension as a collective. Right now, there's people shifting into the fifth dimension all the time, but they're just unable to hold the vibrational space of that. So it's like, oh, this feels so good. Oh, but now it's gone. And it's because it's one person competing against 7 billion people who are in the third dimension, you know? So it's one against everyone right now, but eventually when everyone else makes the collapse, we're going to be able to really level out in that fifth dimensional place. And if you ever, you know, follow the Schumann resonance, it's really interesting what's happening to the electromagnetic vibration on the planet. And we're seeing these incredible spikes in the electromagnetic frequency. And I believe that that's not only directly related to a consciousness shift, but I believe that that's directly related to our, you know, consciousness shift as well. And I think what I channeled from it, because someone asked me once from the Galactic Federation, like, where is it coming from? Ultimately, what I channeled was, it was some sort of like wave, almost like a wave radiation coming from the universe. So I don't know if it was actually a frequency being emitted by the Galactic Federation, which is totally possible. Or I think the other possibility was some sort of like supernova that happened way out in the distance. And we're actually getting these waveforms, like we're getting pushed with these waves. And every wave that hits us is a little bit more intense. And I also, like, I've channeled back in 2012, but I haven't heard much of it from the Galactic Federation since, of the 3 days and three nights of darkness. They told me a lot about that, that there was going to be some sort of event that was going to happen that was going to wipe out our electrical grid. And during that time, and it was weird because it's also prophesized, I believe, in the Bible or a couple of different religions where we're going to be judged by God. I think that's what the Bible says. But what they said was this intelligent wave of energy was going to wash over the earth. And that's when we either ascend to a high vibration or we stay in a low vibration. Like, I'm not totally sure. Or people who are in a low vibration aren't meant to move on. Like, there's something there, some sort of like judgment, but you're the only one judging yourself because of your vibration. So a lot of pieces of information, and I try and put it all together, but once again, you know, I don't do that external research, so I can be left quite ignorant in a lot of ways too, because I don't have the full picture. I only have what I know, you know.
Well, what you know is quite fascinating. And Elizabeth, thank you so much for coming on tonight. That was definitely fascinating stuff. And before you head out, tell everybody where they can find you and your work.
Yeah, for sure. So I do a lot of things, essentially you can find me on YouTube, Instagram, and Facebook just under Elizabeth April. You can, of course, find all of those links on my website, elizabethapril.com. And I also have my own podcast out there. It's called Expand with Elizabeth April, and that's on Spotify, iTunes, you name it. I'm on it.
Very good. And thanks again for coming on, and we'll have you back on in the future.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you so much.